Hello, everyone, and welcome to Enablement Amplified. I'm your host, Fiona Simpson. Welcome to the brand new season of Enablement Amplified. This is the very first episode of season two, and I am so excited to share it with you all. Before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who supported season one of the podcast, to the folks who have signed up as members, as part of the podcast community, and for everyone who has cheered along the way. I just wanted to express my gratitude for a moment. The podcast is growing, and we are going to be doing some really fun things with season two and some great ways for listeners and people within the community to get involved. So stay tuned for more details on that very soon, but just so grateful to have you here, and I hope you enjoy episode one of season two of Enablement Amplified. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Enablement Amplified. I am very excited today to have Leanne Leone on the show. Hey, Leanne, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, Fiona, super excited to be here with you today. And yeah, I am a revenue enablement professional, if you will. I've spent a bit over a decade working in revenue organizations and SaaS companies. The first half of my career was spent in sales as an IC and a sales leader, and then transitioned into enablement to serve in that more optimization-focused role. So most recently, I was the head of go-to-market enablement at Logixboard, which is a logistics tech company, where I supported sales, CS, and support enablement.
Awesome. I always love a blend of a little bit of sales, a little bit of CS, support. That's my background too, so love to hear it. I am super excited about this, but Leanne, tell us your what-if question for today's episode.
My what-if question, Fiona, is what if more enablement decisions were made based on data?
There's so many data gurus out there that are going to love this question, because I almost want to ask the question, why aren't you making decisions based on data, right? We'll dig into it.
We'll dig into that. We will.
For sure. But to start us off, give me a little bit of the context here. What made you start thinking about this? What made you ask the question in the first place, so that we can really kind of unpack, because there's a lot in that question, but let's start unpacking.
There is. You know, I think there's a lot going on in the enablement function. Obviously, a lot of people's roles have been cut, teams have been consolidated. And I think what's happening is it's hard for organizations to justify the spend because they're not looking at the function as a revenue optimizer. They're looking at the function as a revenue.
As cost of goods, right?
Yes. As a cost center. Exactly.
Yeah, cost center.
So, the reason for that, I think, is because it's being seen as an execution function. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But if enablement had the right seat at the table to bring data-driven decisions to the team, rather than constantly be told what to do, I think it would transform the way that the function is seen and its ability to optimize the performance of all of the individuals that are quota carrying.
Agreed. I absolutely agree, because, and I'll give you a great example, I was looking at some data this week and I noticed a trend about deals that fall under our ICP versus ones that don't. And I thought to myself, aha, this is a trend that maybe other people haven't picked up on. This is something that we can coach towards, right? Let's disqualify our non-ICPs faster. Let's qualify more ICPs. Let's have marketing, right? Like, there's a lot that comes out of that one little sliver of data. And that puts me, or the enablement person, in the position to think strategically ahead of the curve, as opposed to some of those, what I like to call lagging indicators, like, we missed our number last quarter. We need more enablement. And it's like, well, let's unpack that a little more.
100%. And that's why I wouldn't say that a lot of organizations, or rather, I wouldn't say that blanket statement that organizations don't think in terms of data, don't put enablement in a strategic place. But I think there's some that have a hard time putting the function where it needs to be. So just consistently seeing sales leaders telling enablement what they want them to focus on, rather than letting enablement live in the data, live in the strategic conversations to determine where to put their focus.
Could not agree more. I feel like oftentimes sales leaders can use enablement as like a reactive crutch.
Yes.
Like, we found a problem. We're now going to make it an enablement problem to fix, as opposed to exactly what you just said, letting us have eyes on things before they happen, letting us be a part of the conversation before the product launch or the sales reorg or the whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I think we're completely on the same page, but let's break this down a little bit further. So when you say data-driven enablement decisions, what do you really mean by that?
Yeah. So what I mean by that is that we let data drive what initiatives get enablement attention and the measurements and outcomes that we want to see change. And I think this is just as much of an enablement responsibility to fight and claw and prove their ability to bring these types of things to the table as it is organizations to be more supportive of that type of interaction. And you said it is typically that the revenue leaders will come with the thing they think should be trained upon, whether that's discovery or my favorite is, hey, my reps need more negotiation help or more closing help. But when you dissect data, my example is, you know, revenue started to fall. Sales leader says we need to focus on how to have those late stage conversations. But really what happened and what the data showed was that we needed to get better at proving value before presenting pricing. Because we would get people that would say, yeah, your product looks cool. But then when we put a $50,000 price tag in front of them, they would say, not that cool, because we hadn't done a good enough job. And so the enablement initiative, yes, it was training, but there was also some ROI resources that I was able to work with marketing to produce. And ultimately, yes, closed one, revenue increased, but not because we focused on the end of the funnel. So I think that, you know, yes, like revenue leadership teams should collaborate on everything from anecdotally, what are we seeing? Emotionally, what are we feeling? But that we should also be looking at the data to say, what do we want to see change when we make this shift or put our enablement resources in this? And to go off script a little bit, there's conversations flowing around some Slack communities that I'm in about intake forms for enablement. And so that we can hit, you know, Mr. Sales Leader or Mrs. Sales Leader, if you want me to focus on this thing, you tell me what drew you to want me to focus on this thing and what outcome do you want to change? But I would go even further that ideally enablement is the one bringing to the organization, hey, our close rates are trending in the wrong direction. I've done an analysis. Here is what I have found. So that's where I say that it's an organizational shift to put enablement in the seat, but it's also, you have to prove that you're able and, you know, skilled and talented enough to analyze the data and make those recommendations to be seen in that way.
Agree. And I think what you hit on with the intake form idea, I want to double down on that for a second, because I think what we see, right, when we've talked about that reactive or emotional ask for some form of enablement, is it almost becomes a distraction, right? And when we can say, here are the KPIs for this quarter, here are the OKRs, you tell me how this ask aligns with the goals you've set, right? We're not the ones out there setting sales metrics and doing all that, or maybe we could help, like you said.
Right.
But when we kind of shine the mirror back to our sales leaders and say, you've asked for something that doesn't align with what you told me my responsibilities are for this quarter, so something's got to give.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we do that, we have an opportunity to keep our focus a little more narrow for our enablement team, right? We're not putting fires out constantly. And I think just truly from like a job quality perspective, that helps our team. But I think it also helps prove our value and our authority in the organization. Like, I'm thinking strategically, I'm thinking about the big picture, I'm thinking about processes and the OKRs and the KPIs that we've put in place, and I'm aligned to that. are you with me, right?
Yeah.
And I think it helps cut out a lot of the noise in a really big way. And I think we can use the data for that as well, right? You kind of made the comment like letting data drive which initiatives do get attention. I think we can look at the reverse side of the coin. If we don't have a problem, I'll just make something up. If we have a really good stage one to stage two conversion rate, we don't need to spend enablement time on stage one to stage two conversion.
Right.
Like you said, you get the ask for negotiation. And if we have a really short time frame from like proposal to contract execution, the data is telling us there might not be a negotiation problem. Obviously simplifying a little bit, but I think you get the gist that we can use that double-edged sword to really kind of keep our nose clean in our enablement role and where we're headed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I heard it explained as like, if you come to me and you say my team needs X training, and all I do is say, okay, great, I'll do that for you. That's no different than a prospect shows up to a conversation, wants to see the demo without a discovery. You have no idea what to focus on, but you want to appease them and say, yeah, sure. And so if you turn that back around on the person that's bringing you this thing they want you to do, and you say, hey, this is kind of like this situation that we don't want our reps to do. So how about you tell me what
your pain points,
what to see change,
what outcomes you're looking at.
Exactly. What pain, what outcomes.
What project does this align to in your organization?
So then, you know, we can get
so bad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love it. So I think we've unpacked sort of what we're talking about when we think about data-driven decisions. But the next thing I always like to ask is, okay, let's say we understand data-driven decisions. Let's say we've got the tools in place. What happens when we start leading with those data-driven decisions? How does that change the day-to-day world of our enablement teams?
I think at the end of the day, it changes the function from being seen as very tactical to strategic. Mm-hmm. And it changes the revenue situation associated with the function. And I get it. Like, we're sitting in a revenue org where everyone is essentially walking around with a quota on top of their head. I like envision this, like,
totally.
Everybody walking around with their number. But we're over here going like, well, I don't have a number, but my job is to either get you to get your number or exceed your number or whatever performance maximization looks like for you. If we could quantify that, we would be seen as the force multiplier that every leader wants us to be, but isn't always actually seen as, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Well, and it, again, what I was saying earlier about lagging indicators, somebody hitting their quota is the last indicator. That is the
Absolutely.
End of the train of indicators. And so everything that we do before they get there has an influence on them hitting their quota, right?
Right. I think that, like, in a perfect world, RevOps and enablement are so connected that they're the ones bringing the things to the people leaders rather than the people leaders bringing the things to the team.
Absolutely. So thinking through kind of the current state of enablement, I think you hit the nail on the head that there's so many organizations that do see enablement as a cost center. That's why we're the first folks out the door. So do you see that as a direct correlation? I know you're starting to get there, but I want to dig down a little bit further. Like, do we think that there's a direct correlation between that high turnover and that high layoff rate in enablement right now and this missing from the picture, the strategic concept and this data-driven concept missing from the picture?
Yes. Yes, 100%. But again, like, I would never blanket blame the leaders that make that decision. I think it's a combination of the enablement person forcing themselves to be represented in this way. But it's also, you know, because enablement is still a fairly new function, if a sales leader's been around the block and they've been in the industry for a long time, they're still trying to figure out, what is enablement? What am I doing with this person? You know, you might be hired by a very enablement focused leader, and then they exit the organization and you're constantly reselling the value of enablement. Because again, like, it's on paper, and most people would explain it as, oh, I want enablement to be a force multiplier 100%. But then they don't, it's not treated like that.
Exactly.
And so, yes, I think it relates to the high turnover, because instead of being able to justify that we made this improvement, we can't. Now, the other tough part about it is, if the market is down and in general we're not performing that well, then we have to get in and like incrementally change small things. Like, at the end of the day, there are going to be things that are outside of anyone's control. And so if you can't force multiply,
anything,
then potentially there's another piece of this that is the timing of the enablement hire and function, because, and potentially it gets cut because we got to go back to operating like a super scrappy startup and throwing things against the wall and seeing what fits. And enablement doesn't work in that environment. So that's another thing, is I think potentially organizations matured and then the market shifted. And so this isn't the thing that we're teaching everyone, but here's a problem. We don't know what is. And therefore, we got to recalibrate the machines a little bit. And maybe there's this wave towards the end of this year where we're going to bring y'all back in.
Right. Well, and I think that's a perfect example of that, is any organization that's gone from like a mid-market or an SMB function to an enterprise function, the way you sell, how you sell, how you package, how you market, how your support teams are set up. There's so many pieces of that business change that come into play that, yes, enablement needs to be a strategic part of that. But I'm with you that that might mean a pause in enablement. That might mean a different remit for enablement during that. Maybe they spend some time really internally working on the strategy side. Maybe this is one of the reasons why fractional or contracts enablement has become so popular, that there are periods of time where you don't necessarily need enablement at the front leading the way. There's other things that have to come first.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that as much as I would argue that enablement deserves the strategic perception, they can easily be another cook in the kitchen. So I think, you know, the recipe should already be decided before all the ingredients start getting put in bowls. Problem with that is, if we're then backtracking and, like you said, we're making some major adjustments, it kind of is what it is. And you have this, like, this is what I see in the enablement world. It's like this fruit basket turnover where everybody's getting put back in the pot, and then they're going to find the organization that fits them again. And potentially, you know, person that was laid off switches jobs with me that was laid off just because of, you know, better fit and timing of the organization. So I think that that's another thing that is leading to the role being cut, because at the end of the day, the highest revenue leaders are going to be the ones that want to make those high level strategic decisions, because they're the ones that are going to be held responsible for it.
Yeah, agreed. I like what you said about kind of putting everybody back in the pot and rethinking where they could be. Because I could also see an organization being really successful if you have an enablement person that's really focused on sales and there are big changes in the sales arena. What if they worked on CS enablement for a while, or helping the broader sort of training and development organization for a while, or spent some time shadowing product marketing or other arenas in the business where it's not necessarily that they're no longer needed. It's just that their job function can pivot. I think really smart companies look for ways to do that, because the last thing you want to do, especially with somebody who's helped build something, is lose the tribal knowledge, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if you can think through what can we rinse and repeat in another area of the business that has a little less turmoil and a little less turbulence, and then bring this person back to sales or go to market or revenue org when the time is right, that's the smartest thing to do in my mind.
And what makes enablement people successful is their ability to flex.
Totally.
You know, most people that are sitting in roles like this are able to say, okay, I'm going to go focus over here on more technical enablement, or like you said, CS enablement. Funny thing, you brought that up, is I went back and forth on this question or this other question of what if we really put more enablement resources into CS, because that's where the revenue growth is. Everyone understands that. They want the CS org to function in a more revenue generating way. But are they enabling them and teaching them how to do that? When you're talking about a significant shift in the way that somebody operates in their role, and most CS people are like, well, I'm not in sales for a reason.
Exactly.
So not only do they have to be taught how to be revenue focused, they have to be taught how to see themselves. That the fact that, like, being a commercially focused CSM does not mean that you're basically an AE.
Right. We could have we should have a whole nother episode about that topic, because I am also very passionate about that as well. But I think what we're getting to is, when you have a person in your organization, and let's say they started off in sales or revenue enablement, when you have that person and they've put in the work to find the data, analyze the data, present the data, and prove that they see things from that perspective, that gives that organization an opportunity to use that person as like the Swiss Army knife. And we might need the screwdriver today for the sales team, but tomorrow we might need the switchblade for marketing or whatever it is. And I think ultimately becoming a master of the data and how you present it is an advantage for us as enablement professionals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I really like
But how do you have a conversation with someone that says, hey, we need you to go analyze data and figure out where you can be most impactful, because you're on the list of people to lay off? You know, like,
you got to get ahead of that, I hope. Right.
Like, what if it was, you know, from the top saying, hey, we need to have a conversation because we know you bring value. We know you have a lot of skills and resources, but we want you to determine where to best utilize yourself as a department of one. Like, those are the shifts that would make a big change in the outcomes. And I think it'd just bring more trust into the function. Like, if you as a leader can't quite put the pieces together, then come to your enablement person and let them state their case with data.
Yeah, I love it. So thinking about maybe the opposite side of the coin, what happens when the data gets left out? Or like, tell maybe if you have an example of where this kind of went awry or somebody misread the data. I think you were telling me a little bit of a story about close rates going down and sales leader came up with kind of a weird solution.
Exactly. And it's not any fault of, you know, the sales leader, but when you're all you're hearing is budgets are being cut and your close rates go down, your first thought is to argue with finance to reduce cost or allow us to discount more. And so that was the first thought.
As an enablement person, that just makes me laugh, because that can be a sales leader's first thought. And I'm like, do you not have an MBA, bro?
It's like, what, you know, but tell me you haven't been a part of a sales leadership conversation toward the end of the quarter where the sales leader says, okay, what are our discount strategies for this quarter? How are we going to use the March 31st deadline in the next 2 weeks to get everybody to sign with a free month or a 15-month contract for a 12-month price? Like, it's out there. And it's because they're going on emotion at that point. And I get that. I've been there. When you one step remove yourself from that emotion, it's so easy to say, like, dude, that is not the answer, because you're never going to get out of this cycle and your predictability is going down the drain. So it's not again, it's not anybody's fault. It's the nature of the way that people operate in these moments.
And when you do have that one step back perspective as the enablement person who's looking at the data, maybe you can start to figure out what the issue is that might avoid having to cut costs or go extra crazy on discounting,
exactly.
Right? Like
that's
maybe
exactly
there's something else in the process that's broken. And if you are looking at the data, you can put your finger on it.
Correct. Because in that situation, when you're looking at discounting, you can give it to them for $5,000 and they don't see the value and they can't justify.
And you're commoditizing your product.
But the time and the resources that it would take to implement this thing, you can discount all you want. But again, it's not going to fix the problem. But if you didn't look at movement through the stage, you wouldn't see that we get a lot of people to pricing, then a lot of people fall off. But then to your point, those that stay close fast.
And probably close without a discount because they see the value, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think what we're getting to here in this scenario, right, where somebody sees those dip in close rates, they want to solve for that by reducing the price. Where we could hold steady on price, which leads to, you know, a successful business and profits and EBITDA and all those fun things. Mm-hmm. And we can find the place in the data, like you said, right? People are dropping off at the pricing proposal point and fix that problem without having such a big impact on the bottom line of the business.
Right.
And that's where we prove our strategic worth, I think. Mm-hmm. I love that we're getting to this picture because...
Exactly. That's what brings it all full circle. Now, at the end of the day, might you still have a packaging and product market fit issue? If possible.
Sure.
But you would find that out by recalibrating that metric that makes the most sense and doing testing to see if that made a difference rather than if all of this late stage, you know, madness or chaos to just get signatures signed. Like, I think that that's super hard for enablement person to rinse and repeat because we just started doing whatever it took in week two of the last month of the quarter. And for why?
Right. Well, and then it's like, okay, we hit the end of the quarter. We put out all the fires, maybe half the buildings burned down, whatever. Start it all over again tomorrow.
Correct.
I love that what we're getting to here is, one, the opportunity to be strategic is constant, right? That doesn't change whether it's the first day of the quarter or the last day of the quarter. And that it's, to me, as we're unpacking this, I see it as something that we as enablement professionals need to own for ourselves. And ultimately, at the end of the day, if we can get to this point where we can analyze the data, we can inject ourselves into the strategic conversation, it means we get to stick around longer and we get to do more work and we get to have a bigger impact on the business.
And we have successes that we can take into our next, you know, search or organization.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So just to bring us home for a second, we painted this beautiful picture of what the world of enablement looks like when we are making data-driven decisions. How do you think that impacts the broader revenue org, the broader go-to-market org, the broader company as a whole, living in this perfect world where we have data-driven enablement teams that are focused, they're getting ahead of those lagging indicators? What does it do to the bottom line or the ultimate success of the company?
You should see an increase in revenue per employee, because the point of enablement is to maximize the revenue per employee. So whether that means you need less SDRs to set the same amount of meetings or less AEs to hit quota or higher quota with the same AEs, but that's where, like, we're often also process oriented. So if we're given the ability to recalibrate processes and make things more efficient, then we're dialing down the cost per employee and we're increasing the revenue per employee. So yes, we can look at all of these like salesy metrics, but if you took this concept to the entire organization, you could say, hey, you know, your bonus is based on if you can increase revenue per employee by $5.
Yeah. I think there's so many smart ways to motivate enablement team members to follow the money, right? And to do things like increase revenue per employee, increase transaction averages, whatever it might be, time to first deal if they're focused on onboarding. Like, there are so many dollar-based and revenue-based things that we can attach enablement success to, and a lot of companies don't even bother. And I'm like, pay me more if I'm doing a good job, and don't pay me the money if I'm not doing a good job, right?
Yeah, it could go both ways.
Yeah. All right, Leanne, well, this has been great. I think this really dug into not just a conversation about data and numbers and like the nitty gritty part, but what that impact has on the business as a whole from an enablement perspective. So thank you so much for bringing this question to the table. Before we head out, I always love to, you know, double down on the theme of Enablement Amplified and ask you two quick questions, starting with, how can we amplify you? What are you up to? What's going on in your world that we as an enablement community can help out with?
Yeah, I mean, first is just connections. I would love to build connections. I am actively looking for my next role in, you know, revenue, sales, go-to-market enablement. So would love to connect with anyone that has connections to that type of role.
And I'll be sure to link your LinkedIn in the show notes so people can follow you, connect with you there.
Yes.
And then piece two, I always like to pay it forward a little bit. So anybody come to top of mind as someone else you want to amplify out there in LinkedIn land, in the go-to-market space, wherever that might be?
Hey, do you have anyone in mind?
Okay. I can cut that part.
Well, I mean, I don't just like no one specific.
That's okay.
But I also think that, like, how I would answer that question is not with any one particular person, but just that we all know that a lot of our roles have been affected. And so when we see a role that maybe we are a little bit more qualified for or less qualified for, you know, you have your people like Stephanie White, who are very experienced in leading large teams. And so me, that hasn't done that, can connect her with that. Or if there's someone that's looking for more of a specialist, maybe it's just an instructional designer. If we all challenge ourselves to get to know our peers well, then maybe that fruit basket turnover approach recalibrates itself in a way that more people are put into the right roles for them.
I absolutely love that. I think we can do a lot to amplify ourselves as a collective, as a group of professionals that are all in the same boat, to be honest. So maybe that's the challenge for everyone. If you're out there in the market right now looking for jobs and you come across something that's not a good fit, go through your brain, go through your Rolodex. Not that people really have one anymore, but find someone you can pass that along to or post it in one of the Slack groups. Hey, I came across this role. I don't know if anybody's a good fit, but I'm putting it out there because the rising tide raises all the ships.
Right.
I wasn't going to do this, but I am going to do this because we're talking about it. Something very exciting is coming down the pike. Leanne and I have had a chance to talk about it just a little bit. But one comment that you made is, you know, connecting one-on-one more with people in the enablement space. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but Leanne and a couple other people have agreed to come on a little journey in the enablement community. So stay tuned for a lot of cool stuff, specifically around connecting one-to-one with other folks in enablement. I don't know. Should we say more than that, Leanne, or should we keep it a mystery for another week or two?
It's up to you. I don't know how close you are to launch. I'm a big fan of generating excitement and curiosity before like laying it out there. So
yeah,
that's probably good.
I'll say this. Folks can follow the Enablement Amplified podcast page on LinkedIn for a lot of exciting stuff soon to come. And we'll leave it at that. Keep people questioning and in the dark a little bit. Well, Leanne, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I have had such a good time talking about data, which is not a sentence I ever thought I would say.
No, well, that's what makes us nerds.
Absolutely. And I think everybody in enablement is a little bit of a nerd in some way, shape, or form.
I agree.
Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure. And just happy to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was great chatting with you, Fiona.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and comment on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe to our email list at www.enablementamplified.com to get every new episode delivered right to your inbox. As always, thanks so much for listening. I'm your host, Fiona Simpson. Take care.